This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
The Sam and Rose Stein Institute for Research on Aging is committed to advancing lifelong health and well-being through research, professional training, patient care, and community service. As a nonprofit organization at the University of California San Diego School of Medicine, our research and educational outreach activities are made possible by the generosity of private donors. It is our vision that successful aging will be an achievable goal for everyone. To learn more, please visit our website at aging.ucsd.edu.
I'm super excited to be here today to talk about decoding the dark side of the human genome and tell you about our research at looking at ancient viruses and how we're studying them in terms of their interplay with aging. In terms of my journey, I'm incredibly happy to be back home in San Diego. I was born and raised in San Diego and did my scientific training actually in another beautiful location in Hawaii for 10 years. Previous 5 years, I've actually been in New York City at Weill Cornell Medicine as a faculty member there, really developing a research program focused on looking at the interplay of viruses and aging in the immune system. And as was stated, I'm super excited to be back in San Diego and back home and part of this incredible aging group that we have here at UC San Diego, as well as the Stein. For today, I really wanted to introduce three different topics. And for today's talk, I'm going to introduce what exactly do I mean by ancient viruses that are in everyone's DNA? And how did they become part of the human genome or part of our genes in the first place? The second part, I'm going to tell you a little bit about how we think that these hidden viral elements in our genes become active as we age, and how we think this potentially could increase inflammation and alter the immune system. And what have scientists such as myself discovered so far about their impact on age-related diseases? A lot of this too, I'll tell you about a more modern virus that we know a lot about that our lab has also studied, which is HIV. That also is a virus that can get into our genes. And then I'll end and tell you what we know, such as lifestyle choices, our emerging therapies, or preventative measures that we think potentially may help to lessen or suppress or silence these ancient viruses and promote longevity or a healthier aging process. So really the goal of our research in terms of what we're really trying to do as an outcome is to study how we extend the portion of life that's spent free from serious disease. In terms of, the grand plan of what I think we'd really want to do is to live the most amount of years without disease processes occurring. And for us, we've really been focused on looking at what matters most. And we think that it's really your genes, your lifestyle, and the environment. The interplay of all three of these aspects really is a large determinant in terms of the aging trajectory. In terms of our way to study this, we're really looking at the longitudinal process of chronological age. And in this figure here, I'm showing you what we're really studying is this gap between the aging process over time that we can measure by each year, and adding on top of that, those exposures that we think that could influence an advancement, so acceleration of this process of aging, or the reverse being a suppression or reduction in the aging process throughout time. For our lab, we're really not focused on stopping this process, which there are some aging groups that are interested in terms of stopping or reversing aging completely. We're really interested in making the change in terms of aging well and aging at a rate that we think is, really promoting a healthy lifestyle. And as I said here, this process really has been studied a lot from a lot of different labs in terms of looking at the exposure to the environment, diet, social stressors, economic stress. And our lab has really been focused on infections. Today, I'm not going to tell you a lot about the infection that really upended the whole world, COVID-19. But as you could imagine, COVID-19 clearly had an impact on the aging process all over the world. So you can really see here how environment, and particularly in terms of infectious disease or viruses, can impact the aging process. In terms of our own genes, one of the surprising parts is that the portion of the human genome that we really studied when the human genome was essentially decoded, and a large part of this process actually occurred here in California as well as at the National Institute of Health, was that what we were really finding out at this initial time was that we thought that all the genes that were going to be discovered and focused on were those genes that were making the material in our cells that were coding for proteins that we thought would really be the solution to solving disease and potentially having some insights into aging. And what we realized was that a large part of the code that was decoded in our human genome really was termed junk DNA. So it was pieces of DNA and material, if you want to think about it in terms of a recipe book. A large part of this recipe book had an unknown code, and this code was referred to as junk DNA. And this junk DNA, for a large part of the scientific process, was really ignored and not focused on, and is really thought to have no apparent function. But given a lot of new recent tools we have in the lab and a lot of additional ability to look at different analysis methods, we found that, and others have noticed as well, that a large part of our genetic material or DNA code that was typically referred to as junk DNA includes agent viruses. So up to 8% of the DNA or genetic material in every cell in every person has a large component of these ancient viruses that were embedded in the genome millions and millions of years ago. And these viruses essentially were embedded into our DNA and silenced throughout time. And for a large part of what we thought initially was that they had no real function, and essentially they were just this junk material that was a part of our DNA code. But what we've found is that, you know, as we start to think about this process, and as others did, and a large part of the study of these ancient viruses has focused on first, how did they become part of the human genome? And really, the way that a large part of these ancient viruses became part of the genome is through the process of using a retrovirus. So these ancient viruses are retroviruses. The most similar retrovirus we have currently, which infects cells that are not in our germline, would be HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, which I'll tell you a little bit about how we're utilizing some therapeutics there to impact potentially the aging process in people living with HIV. But in terms of these endogenous retroviruses, these are viruses that embedded their genetic material or recipe book into our chromosomes and DNA and became essentially passaged through germline cells across generations and throughout evolutionary time into the DNA of humans. And as you can see here, this is showing you essentially each of these potential endogenous retroviruses inserting the material into our genetic material. And what we've started to realize is that these ancient viruses have essentially started to awaken as we started to look at cohorts of people throughout the aging process. And really the best analogy I like to use in terms of when you think of activity of genes is the analogy of a light switch. So when your cell, or in terms of the ability of the immune system, needs to mount a response, different parts of our genetic material are utilized essentially to have a response. This response can be quite dynamic, so quite quick, or it can be on a slower time scale. Very similarly, when a virus inserts its material, that virus needs to essentially copy itself or be active. That activity is essentially regulated at the DNA level by these light switches that we're able to measure in the lab. These light switches, for the most part, for a large part of all of these ancient viruses that are part of human DNA, are essentially shut off. So the light switch is turned off completely. And these viruses essentially have no activity and they're not utilized. And they remain basically inert. However, recently what has started to be realized is that there seems to be this resurrection of endogenous retroviruses during the aging process. So essentially these parts of ancient virus that's embedded in our DNA start to become active. And through this activity, these viruses are making particles or pieces of material in some of them that are starting to impact human cells. And really starting to reinforce aging processes related to immune senescence, inflammation processes. And this is really, I think, where a large part of the interest and study of these ancient viruses has been focused on recently in terms of understanding how these viruses, A, are becoming active, and B, how they're starting to impact hallmarks of aging or different aging processes. And really a large part of this has been, you know, I think, quite exciting in terms of recent tools to be able to study these viruses and look at them in people's DNA, where previously a large part of DNA studies have really ignored a large part of these endogenous viruses that all of us have embedded in our DNA. There's also been an emerging effort as well in terms of looking at how these viruses that become active, and a large part of them are actually driving potentially disease processes. And a large part of the aging field has really been focused on this idea that the aging process itself is a major driver of disease and comorbidity. So a major risk factor for development of disease seems to be the aging process. So essentially, if you can slow down the age process, you may be able to prevent the onset of chronic diseases. Here I'm showing you just a summary of diseases that have been linked to the reactivation of these ancient viruses in people's DNA. A large part, the major component, which has really received a lot of attention, and you know, I think a large part of the research effort has been focused on cancer. So as you can see on the left here in green, this bar chart showing you that over 50% of the disease distribution for the activation of retroviruses that are ancient in DNA have been linked to different cancers in people. There's also an emerging literature as well in terms of looking at different diseases that are impacting the brain. There's currently a large investment both from the National Institute of Health and a lot of different research groups in terms of looking at the resurrection of ancient viruses in terms of Alzheimer's disease. So the thought process being that potentially these viruses that are embedded in the DNA in different brain cells that are initially inert or silenced become active. And through this activity, they start to lead to inflammation in the brain and really start to trigger a cascade of the development of plaque, potentially in Alzheimer's disease. There's also some indication as well that people that are suffering from post-viral syndromes, such as long COVID, may see as well this activity or activation of ancient viruses that seems to be related to this phenomenon of CNS injury that may be occurring. In terms of the reason that we think that they're important to study is that viruses such as these endogenous retroviruses that are embedded into our DNA really shape the immune system. And in this figure here, what I'm showing you in red here is what you would normally see in terms of the activity of the immune system in terms of a normal infectious process. In this example here, I'm showing you viral replication. For a large part of the audience, we all know when we get sick, if we have a fever, the immune system becomes quite active. This inflammatory response is quite heightened. So you can think of this such as a wave. This wave is quite high. But through the immune system being able to control the virus or through interventions such as antiviral drugs, we're able to shut down or suppress that viral activity. When that occurs, this inflammatory process starts to subside and reduce. But if you think of this process as an analogy to looking at these ancient viruses, the process of the ancient virus in yellow here would be in terms of age, you would essentially have no activity or no chronic inflammation occurring, naturally speaking. Throughout time and chronological time, as we get older, this activity or age-related inflammation starts to simmer and build throughout the aging process. And if this were to synergize or combined with the activation of ancient retroviruses, other illnesses, other comorbidities, this combined impact on the immune system in terms of shaping this increase in inflammation, we think is a major driver of the aging process and the development of comorbidity. So this is really something we're quite interested in studying, figuring out A, how we start to reduce these processes, and B, really start to understand which viruses that are embedded into the DNA may become active in certain parts of the body and how we can really start to target those to see ways that we could intervene or to promote a healthier aging process. In terms of what we know, in terms of well-known kind of aging studies, there's not been a lot of ancient virus or retrovirus studies in terms of looking at their activity in a lot of the aging cohorts. That's something that I'm really excited here to join UCSD and to add that area of research and really start to understand how we can study this better in these very well done aging studies. There has been a limited amount of study, which I'll tell you one story about some research on the activity of ancient viruses in blue zones. So there's been one study that's looked in Okinawa, Japan, in individuals that live much longer than average lifespan and health span. In Okinawa, they were able to look at the immune cells of supercentenarians. These are people who live 110 years or older. And it appears that in that small study, there is some evidence that they appear to fend off the resurrection of ancient viruses. So when they looked at the activity of the people they were studying, this supercentenarian group in Japan, these retroviruses or resurrection of ancient retroviruses in their immune system were essentially really low activity. So if you were able to compare people that were even 30 years younger, there was way more activity in those people than there were in these supercentenarians, suggesting potentially that, you know, there may be something intrinsic to their ability to control or fend off the resurrection of ancient viruses that may be related, you know, I think, to a healthier aging process. But, you know, there is, I think, an emerging interest to really look at this and to look at those individuals that are having these exceptional ability to age well, and to look at the ancient viruses that may be in their DNA and to see how the activity may be suppressed or shut off. The other area we're really, really interested in as well is, can we use information about ancient viruses to measure aging? So essentially, could we take someone's DNA and not know their age or their biological aging rate? And could we measure aging? So really, this has kind of revolutionized the field. There's been a lot of popular press in this area, a lot of groups working in this space to really develop a test that you could take to measure what your biological age rate is. There's a lot of investment and development in terms of looking at people's blood samples potentially and measuring something. This is being both done for people as well as for animals. So here I'm showing you a New York Times report where they're using similar kinds of techniques and methodology to age polar bears. And in this particular instance, they're utilizing these marks that are embedded on DNA, referred to as DNA methylation in these epigenetic clocks. There's a lot of commercial companies as well that people are sending their samples to try to get what their biological aging rate is. This is an area, I think, of a lot of research investment. And, you know, we're still working to develop more accurate biological aging markers. But we really got interested in thinking in terms of, okay, if we know where these ancient viruses are in people's DNA, could we use the information there to tell essentially how old someone was and really to kind of get some more evidence that the activity or these marks at ancient DNA may be related to the aging process? This concept in terms of looking at DNA and developing these biological age markers or predictors of aging had really been developed from three different groups at UCLA, Yale, and here at UCSD. And what they really, I think, weren't quite good at was showing that there was a biological signal in our DNA for predicting age. And when they were able to measure these chemical marks on our DNA and develop these predictors of biological age referred to as epigenetic clocks. However, these biological aging markers were not focused on retroviruses, and they didn't really get at why these biological clocks were able to be so good at predicting biological age rates in people. So what we did is we looked at just these retroviruses in people's DNA recently, and we developed this clock of biological aging that we're referring to as retroage. And it's a highly accurate human blood biomarker of aging just from looking at ancient viruses in people's DNA. What we're able to do was look at a cohort of over 10,000 people that were age 18 and greater, all the way out to greater than 100 years of age. Here I'm showing you what their predicted age is just based on their retroelement activity. Each dot is a person. So some people are predicted to be aging higher than their actual chronological age here on the bottom. And then we have other people, right, that are aging at a lower predicted age than their actual chronological age. But as you can see here, it's highly accurate at predicting those individuals that are younger just based on their retroelement or ancient virus activity using this DNA code that's embedded just at these ancient viruses. So for us, we're really quite excited to show that there does seem to be some link here in people beyond these other exciting studies that have shown a resurrection of these ancient viruses throughout the aging process. There's also been emerging use of this as well in terms of looking at these ancient viruses across all mammals. So we were able to look at over 185 different mammals using a similar approach of a data set that was generated of aging across all these different mammals. Here, I'm just an example of cats and dogs. We can look at the ancient virus activity in all mammals, and this process seems to be conserved, suggesting to us that, you know, this activity of ancient viruses really seems to be a potential hallmark or feature of the aging process that warrants study, but just showing you kind of the ability to be able to do this across different species. And now getting, I think, to the part that, you know, I think most people are interested in is there a way essentially to turn off the resurrection or activity of these ancient viruses? And how could we essentially flip the light switch off in these viruses and lock them and potentially promote kind of a less activity of these viruses throughout time? The most widely studied modern retrovirus has been HIV. So it's human immunodeficiency virus. This virus conceptually is a retrovirus that embeds its material into human DNA. The one key difference here between this virus and ancient viruses is ancient viruses embedded our germline. So every single cell in our body would have an ancient virus in them. In terms of the context of this more modern retrovirus, HIV, HIV only infects a couple cells of the immune system that are already there. So it wouldn't infect every cell in a person. And the one thing that this virus has really taught us is that people living with HIV experience accelerated aging. So this virus really accelerates the aging process in these people and reduces health span. So here I'm showing you in the red dot line here what it would look like in a person living with HIV. They have a higher incidence of comorbidity and their aging process is really accelerated. Those individuals that are not living with HIV would be along the standard line here. And the hope being in terms of the field of aging and geroscience that if we're able to target the aging process, we could reduce essentially this line. But what the HIV research field has really taught us is that there are therapeutics that are available for people living with HIV. And these are antiretroviral therapies that shut off that virus and have really led to significant improvement in life expectancy in people living with HIV. So the expected survival of a 20-year-old person living with HIV currently is positive in terms of 55 years that they've gained from being on medication. Prior to that, someone living with HIV, prior to the availability of these antiviral drugs that would shut off the retrovirus, would be essentially only maybe 8 years. That they would be able to live after acquiring the virus. In the context of ancient retroviruses, there has been some study that suggests that some of these antiretroviral drugs that are being utilized globally by millions of people have activity against ancient retroviruses and may shut them off if they become active. So this is an active area of investigation in terms of looking at how potentially these modern drugs that are being utilized by a lot of people for a modern virus that conceptually quite similar to ancient retroviruses could be shut off by utilizing this. And also currently, there's a large research focus on people that don't have HIV that are utilizing these drugs for prevention. So to prevent the acquisition of HIV, that gives us the opportunity as well to potentially look at how they may impact the ancient retrovirus activity. So really the concept of targeting ancient viruses emerges as an exciting approach to target aging. Here I'm showing you a company that I have no affiliation to, but there's a lot of research investment in terms of utilizing these human endogenous retroviruses or junk DNA as a targetable approach to stop the aging process from being accelerated and really to promote healthy aging. We're really interested in working with those groups that have cohorts of people that are aging well and to understand in those cohorts of people and participants whether their retrovirus activity is suppressed or is there something unique about their lifestyle, environment, or potentially other factors that may be related to promoting the reduction in terms of the activity of these ancient retroviruses. So just to summarize, we carry these fossilized viral DNA components that can play a large part and a role in how we age. Ongoing research is uncovering the links between these viral remnants and diseases often associated with getting older. We think that by understanding how these ancient retroviruses and even new retroviruses are successfully managed in people living with HIV, we can gain insights into how we might someday regulate the expression of these ancient viral elements in our DNA and potentially improve healthy aging for everyone. So, if there is a time point in someone's life that we do see that the aging process starts to accelerate, maybe that acceleration in the aging process is due to some environmental things such as stress, diet, and someone isn't able to make a change or a lifestyle change. Maybe there is potentially the opportunity to shut off these viruses that might be driving or adding to the burden of inflammation and these negative aging related biological processes that we can really start to target therapeutically. And as we all know, these healthy habits such as good diet, exercise, and stress reduction, really are the foundation before we await kind of these more targeted therapies that could emerge from more evidence from clinical trials that we think may be beneficial to add on to the three things we really know have the largest impact. And for all of us here in San Diego, we're quite lucky in the concept of having a beautiful environment and the perfect place to live. So that really, I think, gives us a leg up in terms of having one of the core pillars of being able to promote healthy aging. And I think it's really filling in those other aspects and touches, and such as a good diet and exercise. I think also monitoring our health as well in terms of looking at how our DNA activity changes throughout life is another important factor that we'll start to see as we get more research being understood. So with that, I just wanted to thank everyone, and I'd be happy to acknowledge all the groups I've worked with. Here I'm showing you a myriad of different people through my time, both being in Hawaii. I've had the unique opportunity to work with the US military, and then being in New York City as well, having the opportunity to work with a lot of different groups in New York. And now being back home in San Diego, I'm quite, excited and happy to be able to plug in with all the wonderful groups here in San Diego and to work with them as well. But be happy to take questions. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Corley, for a fantastic talk. I want to remind everybody that now is our Q&A portion, and this is a great opportunity to ask Dr. Corley any questions you have about his research presentation today. Can I measure how old my body is beyond my birthday? And are there tests I can buy to do this? This is a great question. I want to know the answer to this.
Yeah, so currently there are quite a variety of different groups commercially that are offering these at-home tests for sending in these biological age tests. I think at this point, it's kind of just a fun exercise to kind of see where you may sit in that regard. We don't have yet, I think, definitive evidence that the algorithms they're using for what they're outputting in terms of the estimation of your biological age seems to be clinically, important. So that evidence we're still awaiting. There is a large investment currently to try to improve the clinical benefit of some of those aging biomarkers that are being utilized commercially. The one nice thing, though, is that information could be dynamic. So contrary to companies such as 23andMe, where people maybe have sent or ancestry.com your DNA sample to get your DNA code decoded, that would never change for the most part. So your actual DNA recipe book makes you. That wouldn't alter, but these biological age tests would. So you essentially could take them throughout different parts of your life. For myself, in the research arena, we did this before and after we got sick. And as you can imagine, that had a large impact, as well as having a newborn.
Well, yeah, that
a
will stress
child.
The body a little
Yeah,
bit.
that definitely transiently, at least, increased my aging process. But
Interesting. So I'm curious. I want to ask a few more questions about this. I'm curious, what does it typically involve? Like a drop of blood, or how does it get collected? Blood sample?
So it's just a mailed kit that these commercial companies have really optimized where it's just a finger stick. And then you can put it either in a tube or there's like a little card they give you and you just put it on there. And it's the remarkable thing, at least with what they're measuring on our DNA, is it's quite stable. So that same kind of material could even be measured from ancient DNA from mummies, you know, anything that has DNA material, they're able to kind of capture that from. So, you know, it's a quite stable signature in that respect.
Okay, I'm actually going to try this. I've always wanted to know this. So this will be great. I'll have to reach out to you to see which one you used.
Yeah, and I mean, the companies are continuously kind of updating their algorithms. So, you know, as the example I gave, this ancient retrovirus approach, that could be applied essentially to any of these commercial tests, you know, in terms of kind of the clinical relevance of that and impact, you know, that's still, you know, people are still looking for more evidence to make clinical recommendations on it. But at this point, you know, I think it's more just a exercise in terms of being able to kind of see, you know, what that may look like, you know, if you're interested in that kind of.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, next question. You mentioned healthy diet, exercise, and stress reduction. Aren't smoking and alcohol important factors in reducing lifespan through disease and perhaps other mechanisms? Do you have thoughts on this, Dr. Corley?
Yeah, so I would say those are probably the two largest drivers in terms of, you know, I think the environment. There should be, I think, you know, the biggest one is smoking reduction. If I was going to recommend anything, it would be that. That process, at least in terms of some of the studies we have, also seems to potentially activate some of these ancient retroviruses. So that smoking process really leaves a mark on your biological aging process. And you know, there is kind of a thought, people have different estimations in terms of, you know, how much you smoke, how many years and minutes you're taking off your life, essentially, of, you know, a healthier lifespan. But yeah, I would agree completely. That's a great question.
Okay, great. Okay, next question. Thank you, Dr. Corley, for a fascinating presentation. I'm curious whether there is geographical and or ethnic variability in the amount of ancient viral DNA levels. And in particular, are there data suggesting the blue zones have less ancient viral DNA? Oh, this is a great question.
Yeah, wonderful question. So for the most part, the major parts of these ancient viruses would be consistent across different geographical regions. However, there would be individual variation in terms of some of that code could be altered across different geographical regions. So there is variation within each of those ancient viruses that's in that particular piece of DNA. In terms of the blue zones, wonderful question. I think that's something that a lot of groups currently are probably actively looking into because that genetic information, as well as the ancient virus activity, would be available or able to be studied in those people that have exceptional aging in the blue zones. I think that's something we'll look forward to in terms of some of the groups that are studying those blue zones, what that data looks like, and if there's a consensus across all the different blue zones. But I think too, part of it is kind of the blue zone promoting this holistic beneficial aspect on the immune system. So the activity of those ancient viruses may be you know, reduced or controlled in a way that may be unique to that population. But there definitely is individual variation within each of those ancient viruses, as we would have, you know, we all have essentially the same genes, but the slight changes in those genes can make differences in people similar to the ancient retroviruses. That would be a very similar process.
Okay, great. Thank you. Don't most antiretrovirals also impair mitochondria function and thus have some degree of negative side effects? Could retroviruses be inhibited without using nucleoside analogs? So this is a very high tech question.
Yeah, wonderful question.
A little over my head.
Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of where the evidence needs to be built. The ancient retroviruses with more modern non-FDA approved approaches on kind of the, you know, research, clinical trial, you know, very early research is really being developed to try to shut those off. So I think a large part of the biotech industry and a lot of groups are working on novel ways to shut off those retroviruses. Currently, I think the only thing we would have widespread evidence would be these drugs that shut off the retroviruses, as was stated, these antiretrovirals that target reverse transcriptase activity. The impact on the mitochondria is well known. However, you know, I think that there are potentially novel reverse transcriptase inhibitors that may be developed or, you know, that may try to circumvent that side effect of mitochondrial function. But yeah, I think it's a great question, you know, and the area of investigation in terms of looking at the benefit potentially of a therapeutic versus the consequence of, you know, maybe a side effect is something that needs to be studied more.
Okay, great. We have another question. Do these ancient viruses hidden in our DNA only become active in certain parts of our body, or can they show up everywhere?
So great question. It looks like they can show up everywhere. However, certain ones seem to be more active in certain parts of the body, such as the brain. The thought process is that potentially, since the brain is this compartment that seems to be a little bit more privileged or less likely to be influenced from the external factors that, you know, really infections really go at, since that material is present in every DNA and every brain cell, it seems like the activity there seems to be a little bit more active or detrimental. However, there's incredible research that has actually shown the opposite effect early in development, that these retroviruses that are ancient, a small subset of them, are fundamental and essential to placenta development. So our actual placenta and the reason we exist is because these ancient retroviruses were there and were able to allow placenta development. And there's also another beautiful study that's recent in the popular press showing how one of these ancient elements, not a retrovirus, but an element, actually led to tail loss. So in primates, why we don't have tails, or why humans don't have tails, is because of some of this ancient process that occurred in terms of these alterations. So in terms of, yeah, different parts of our body, the activity would be, yeah, I think very different in terms of, you know, our brain, our heart, our lungs. That's something that currently a lot of groups are studying using these very generous studies of postmortem studies, where people are able to study different compartments of people. Those are really going to be quite insightful in terms of where these viruses may be and how we can target them.
Okay. So a question about your move to UC San Diego. So you're a new faculty member at UC San Diego. So we want to know, what is your plan for your research lab and your area of focus now that you're going to be, you know, changing from Cornell to UC San Diego?
Yeah, so I'm really excited, you know, I think to bring this ancient virus, retrovirus area of research to the healthy aging cohorts here in San Diego. And, you know, I think to work with the community and look in San Diego to see, are we this kind of, you know, semi-blue zone, and to understand those people that are aging well and healthy, what they may be doing and how their biology may be linked to some of the activity of these ancient retroviruses. And then also too, I think just to, you know, I be able to work with the clinical trial groups as well here. So we have some incredible groups really doing amazing work, trying to look at some of these gerotherapeutics. So interventions we think that can promote healthy aging, and look at how those could be also altering these ancient retroviruses. So that's something that, you know, I'm really excited to be back home and to work on those things. And, you know, I think the other thing too is it'd be beautiful weather.
I know.
Sure missed it. I know New York's quite cold now. So.
It sure is. Yes. Well, we're excited to have you back. I'm curious, will you be doing any type of recruitment with older adults in San Diego County?
We will. So we have a global program. We are currently in Asia, in Thailand. We have a program in Africa. We have a program in Latin America. And then now being, you know, back home in California, yeah, we will be adding that component here as well. But in terms of our program, you know, we think globally in terms of, you know, learning from other parts of the world, you know, how the aging process and other aspects, you know, really, I think is important to really making advancements for everyone. So that's a large part of our research program. But here, you know, excited to plug back in San Diego and learn and add to all the incredible work that's been here. You know, I've been back home for 15 years. So a lot's changed, but a lot's the same. You know, I think
the ocean's still here.
Yeah, I mean, growing up here too, I think you never leave that San Diego kind of feel. So it's great to be back.
That's great. I have another question for you, Dr. Corley. Where can I find good, trustworthy information on ancient virus research and how it relates to aging well?
Yeah, I think a really great resource is if you go onto the NIH website. On the NIH website there, they have a great page at the National Institute of Aging, particularly focused on ancient viruses and junk DNA. And that's where I think a large part of the investment as well, in terms of looking at the link to disease, such as Alzheimer's disease, but then also to looking at more basic research at the activity of these ancient viruses in different aging contexts is a large focus there. But you know, that's information that usually a popular news story is derived from a research study that's published there or posted there. And then the other option too is feel free to contact me. I'd also be a good source of information.
Local expert.
Always happy. You know, I think our lab's being set up currently. So that's another, we hope to host kind of these sessions as well with the community to, you know, I think really kind of get people interested and engaged in this area of research as well. It's a large part of our focus.
Okay. And you are located in the Stein Clinical Research Building, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It's a beautiful building. Yes. Yeah. Donated by Sam and Rose Stein. Okay, can you expand on what is a healthy diet, adequate exercise, and types of stress reduction, since that is what we can control now? Thank you.
Yeah, I think a large part of that, you know, I think is based on the individual working with their, you know, I think a preventative, either a physician, dietitian, where you kind of get a baseline for you, you know, what your body responds to and what works best for you. I do think too that is influenced as well in terms of the different stages of our life that would be different. But I think in most part, it's, I think, avoid all the things we're reading, you know, in the popular press, but I think that are recommended. You know, I'm kind of a proponent of moderation in terms of, you know, a large part of a lot of these recommendations people make. But in terms of an individual, that's something I think that, you know, in consultation, you know, with an expert, in each aspect, you know, whether that's exercise to get the exercise regimen that's best for you, for diet, you know, working with a dietitian to see based on, you know, I think your individual biology, you know, is going to determine how your body responds to whether that's carbohydrates, whether that's fats, whether that's protein. But I think a large part of the studies show, you know, protein is fundamental in terms of diet. You know, I would make the recommendation, but again, you know, I can consult the dietitian. You know, I think these extreme diets probably are not the best in terms of, you know, really cutting out something completely. You know, I think our biology is such that, you know, we kind of rely on moderation, and, you know, I think a well-balanced diet is definitely something to look for. And then in terms of stress reduction, you know, I think yeah, again, that's something that, you know, for an individual, depending on kind of how you cope with stress and deal with those aspects, you know, but I think being able to kind of have an outlet, you know, again, for each individual, it's, you know, I think being able to kind of decompress and, you know, but, you know, I think the stress process in general, biologically, you know, is embedded within all of us. So it's not something I think we can completely avoid, but definitely know how to manage for each individual. But
yeah, there's been some interesting studies coming out of UCSD, and I can't quote them right now, but showing the benefits of doing gratitude practice on a daily basis, reducing stress and improving overall quality of life and well-being and physical health.
Yeah. And, you know, I think those are the groups that, you know, I think really should be, you know, I think engaged with, you know, if that's an interest of, you know, understanding kind of, yeah, those particular aspects. You know, I know we have another group here as well that's doing incredible research in terms of meditation, which is another thing, you know, but I would agree, you know, I think to the exercise comment as well, you know, it's kind of like, that's another way to, you know, holistically, if you combine all three, it's kind of a perfect response. But fundamentally speaking, you know, I think we're on the research side interested in identifying kind of these individualized treatment strategies or plans. But, you know, at this point, the evidence really points to, you know, the three things that were outlined there in terms of, you know, things that actually are quite affordable and, you know, widely available. It's just the most difficult to accomplish
for exactly. Some people. So. Yeah. Okay, another question for you. What is the interface between ancient DNA and gut microbiome for longevity?
Great question. So that's an area we haven't studied ourselves, but others have looked at the activity of the gut microbiome in terms of promoting inflammation and potentially activating these ancient retroviruses in people's gut cells. So there is definitely an interplay there between those two different aspects in terms of these ancient viruses that are in our DNA and our gut cells and our gut microbiome, which is essentially all of these other bacterial constituents and other even viruses themselves in that material within our GI tract and gastrointestinal system. But I think it's an important aspect. And I think that fits too with kind of this aspect of diet. If you're not having the healthiest diet, you have lots of stress, That's really going to have an impact on your gut microbiome, and that in turn can influence your gut cells. And if they're not happy, that would activate these retroviruses. So, you know, it's kind of this interplay, almost this rolling cascade of change that, you know, really should be potentially prevented. But it is an area that I think, again, UCSD is a world leader in terms of microbiome research. And, you know, I think incorporating those kind of studies with looking at some of these studies we are hoping to do would be a perfect way to get at, you know, future insights into that area.
Yeah, there's so much aging research happening in so many different directions at UC San Diego. I think there's so many great opportunities for you here. Anything else you want to share with us today, Dr. Crowley, before we wrap up for the day?
No, I just look forward maybe to giving an update, you know, hopefully at another of these wonderful webinars. And we hopefully at that point too, we'll maybe have some data from some of the science studies in San Diego. I can kind of give an update and show how this initial research we've done in other places now will look in San Diego. So look forward to that.
Right. That's great. And we will be sure to share your updates in our newsletter or on social media and on our website as well. So with that, I want to say welcome to UC San Diego. Welcome back to UC San Diego. We are delighted to have you as one of our faculty members at the Sam and Rose Stein Institute for Research on Aging. And with that, I want to thank all of the attendees that came today and shared in your lovely talk, and remind all of you that we have public lectures for free all throughout the rest of the year, our symposium, and our newsletters that come out every other week. And we would just love to hear from all of you. With that, I want to remind you, you can find us at aging.ucsd.edu. Thank you all. And thank you, Dr. Crowley, for an excellent talk.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone. Bye.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.